This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, should we have stricter lockdown measures? We're expecting an announcement on whether we'll see stricter lockdown measures, a return to MCO 1.0 in some ways, after a National Security Council meeting today. In the meantime, we'll be looking at how tighter restrictions affect three facets of our life: public health, mental well-being, and the economy. So tell us, do you want to see a stricter lockdown and a return to MCO 1.0? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila. And it has been a roller coaster of a week, really. I mean, it just seems. It was just earlier this week that we were talking about high numbers in Selangor and a potential full lockdown in just that state. By the end of the week, now we're talking about potentially a full lockdown for the whole country. Going back to the days of MCO 1.0, of course, now under MCO 3.0, we are supposed to be on some sort of measures are in place, but a lot of economic activities are still running. And I think it's the high numbers that have really become the cause for concern, right? Because we've been seeing steady days of numbers rising, four digits. Yesterday was a record high of 6,806 cases with 59 deaths. And that's been another cause of concern as well, the rising number of deaths. And along with that, we have higher incidences of hospitalization, our medical resources being stretched. So just to say, today's COVID cases are 6,493 positive cases. We will go into more detail later. But all of this is giving rise to a real concern on what needs to be done and whether and the larger impact of a potential full lockdown, a return to that first MCO1, right? And just to give you a little bit of a refresher, that first lockdown happened on the 18th of March, and it involved a general prohibition on mass movement. There were roadblocks everywhere. You had a 10-kilometer travel limit imposed on how far you could go, and only one person was allowed out to buy necessities. All schools and businesses were completely closed. All borders were closed. Travel was prohibited. And just some of the things that happened around that time, we had an influx of returning Malaysians from overseas. They had to undergo quarantine in quarantine centres. We did also have the automatic 6-month loan moratorium. That was in April. Generally speaking, the MCO was considered a success. Our numbers dropped down to 50 cases daily. I mean, 50 cases to me now sounds like it often feels bizarre when I think back to that being just a year ago, and how at one point thinking of numbers of in the three digits felt like it was high and something to cause anxiety. And yet here we are a year later talking about numbers being in the 6,000s. So I think it's sort of tough for anyone really to decide what the solution for this could be. And a lot of the criticism has been coming from the fact that on the one hand, you have calls for a full lockdown, and potentially a way to prevent people from going out and from putting in, for lack of a better word, that circuit breaker. However, on the other hand, we have businesses that are struggling, businesses that have been struggling for a year now, and no real means of mitigating that economic impact and long-term economic impact that we continue to face. So that's where we're at. And because we are still uncertain as to whether this lockdown is going to happen, we are waiting on the National Security Council to make any announcements in that regard. We thought we'd spend this hour discussing the potential impact of the lockdown, the pros and cons of implementing something like that, and I suppose what needs to be done as part of the mitigation measures, not just from an economic point of view, but from a self-care, from a mental health perspective as well. So that's what we're talking about today. And we want to hear from you. Do share your opinions with us. Do you want to see a stricter lockdown? Do you think a return to MCO 1.0 is what could help us right now? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll be speaking to Professor Dr. Sharifa Izzat Wanpute, Professor in Health Economics, Hospital and Health Management from the UKM Medical Centre. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:14. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila. Today, we're discussing the possibility of a full lockdown on the wake of really conversations that have been happening throughout this week. The fact that our numbers are steadily rising. We saw a record high of positive cases yesterday. And so we are asking you, do you want to see a stricter lockdown? Do you want to see a return to the days of MCO 1.0? Share your thoughts with us. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, joining us on Zoom is Dr. Sharifa Izzat Wanpute, who is a professor in health economics, hospital and health management at the UKM Medical Center. Dr. Sharifa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the invite.
Do you think there should be a nationwide lockdown at this stage?
Well, it's a very good question, Sharmila. In fact, if you divide this by different states, in Malaysia, you'll see that there's different RT or the rate of transmission of the virus at different levels. So for me personally, I think the states which are badly affected by the virus, they should go for full lockdown. But of course, it depends, again, negotiations and of course, state decisions as well. Having their input is actually very, very beneficial for the country. But in general, I would say that at this point in time, a general full lockdown is actually very beneficial because this is one of the fastest, safest way to actually control the transmission of the virus. And having said that, we know the issue of the economic loss, but also the issues of mental and also health distress during lockdown that may happen to the population, you know, in general.
Now, people usually look back at MCO 1.0 as a success. Would you say that it was successful, and what made it effective?
1.0 happened very early on, Sharmila. There was a lot of changes and it was very fluid, and there's a lot of changes that has happened up to this extent that we are in the more dire strait, as we call it now. When MCO 1.0 happened, the number of cases, new cases, was actually not as bad as now. We will be able to control it better, and the enforcement is relatively new. It's something that the population has not seen. So I think the adherence and also compliance by the population per se in general was very, very good. That may not happen now with our, you know, huge number of cases and also the pandemic fatigue that has affected many of the populations in Malaysia. And I think a lot of countries have also this problem. They're having waves again because of the pandemic fatigue, and people are getting more lax and things like that. So I'm not sure whether we are able to achieve the same impact that we were able to achieve in 1.0.
So how can we deal with that pandemic and MCO fatigue? Why is it so important to handle that?
This virus is actually very contagious. There has been reports. I think this is a reiteration of, you know, facts that I think most of the population have known already. But I need to repeat this because we know that it happens through droplet. When you cough and sneeze and, you know, most of your saliva, spit will actually go flying everywhere. But there are also studies that have shown that it can be transmitted through airborne. Now, there's a difference between airborne and also airborne stroke droplet aerosol versus the droplets. So when you have airborne and also aerosol, the transmission can be faster, it can be wider, and, you know, it's more difficult to control because the air can actually contain the virus, even though the person that actually spitted it out has actually moved on, and it can remain in the air for a few hours. There were some studies and cases that has happened in Hong Kong, in China, looking at ventilations and also how the effect of air conditioning and so on. Now we have another new so-called threat, which is the VOC, the variants of concern. Some of these variants are coming in from different countries that they have been found initially, like UK, South Africa, India, and so on. And there have been even questions whether our local variants have actually mutated because they keep changing the strains and the S-spike proteins and so on. So what happened is that literature has shown that it becomes more easily spread now. And it also is more, so it's more contagious, but also it has increased the virulence. That means the pathogenicity, it affects, you know, a population of younger age group, and there's more difficulty in screening the disease. So I think the dynamics of this virus changes has also impacted the population. Hopefully, we are getting more aware of this problem. We have seen a higher number of cases, not only death, but also mortality. We know about the issue of healthcare strain on the ICUs and hospital beds. So hopefully with that, our compliance to SOP is increased and we are able to adhere better to the SOP.
So we have been seeing worldwide, though, the cycle of countries moving in and out of lockdown. Do you think this is going to be the way for the foreseeable future, or are there things that we could do to reduce the chances of this happening?
Definitely, Shamila, I totally agree with you that I foresee that we are going to see this dynamics as well in Malaysia, moving in and out from lockdowns, but also having to change, keep changing our countries that we basically prevent from getting into Malaysia, and also we traveling to that countries, because even though in overseas, all these are changing and very dynamic. So having the vaccine will actually help. But of course, we know the issues of the green passport and the green lane of certificates and so on. So there's going to be a whole new ball game when that comes around. As we know that, you know, in Malaysia, vaccine is not compulsory. It is highly encouraged, and this is mostly voluntary. So how we're going to relate with the issues of the green passport and so-called the green lane and things like that, that is something that the government have to look as well. I would say that WHO would not actually recommend for a compulsory vaccination programs, but we have seen the success of certain countries that has put compulsory, and the more uptake and also compliance of the population going for vaccination is in some way is better when you have a compulsory system. So that is something that probably Malaysia can think about, you know, having some pockets of population that might be compulsory and having some pockets of the population that might be voluntary.
Now, looking back, what could we perhaps have done better? How could we have avoided getting to this point in this pandemic where with such a strain on our healthcare system?
Right. I don't even know where to start. There's so many things that we could have done better. I think one of the bigger concerns that I had, that from my point of view, was that how we are able to, we should have been better curtailing incoming countries from going into Malaysia. Most of this VOC are people coming into Malaysia and bringing the virus along, and somehow or rather they have been able to transmit them to other staff and also other family members with that variants. So I think lockdown not only should be for Malaysians, but we need to better control our borders, not only formally but also informally. When we say formally, means that you come by flight, you come by air, you come by sea and things like that, and we need to keep tab of how bad is the situation in overseas, because only then we can say, oh, you cannot come into Malaysia. You have a new strain in your country. We don't know. We are not able to detect that strain yet in our country. So we should be able to do that faster. Even though we keep saying this, we see that a lot of reports and also published reports, and this is not hearsay evidence. This is published reports or published newspaper reports saying that, you know, even now we see a huge number of people coming in by flights and so on for certain either business or people returning to Malaysia as well, and these are our own countrymen. So that is actually worrisome. The second part is that we see that there's a lot of movement. Not only during Hari Raya, I mean, Raya was a total blunder, but there was other blunders as well that has happened. You know, we were not able to constrain our district, especially the red zone districts in one own state. Example, you have Selangor and you have a few districts in Selangor, and these districts will have different so-called risks, because one district might be, you know, in higher infectious rate, or the RT is higher, or basically your red zones in one district. So we should have been able to detect that and basically prevent inter-district movement way back before we allowed everybody to move around in different in different districts in one state. So now for that, we are paying for that blunder. So we can see now that, you know, almost every state in Malaysia, almost there are almost all red zones everywhere. And, you know, even though we have the SOP saying that you should not be traveling back to your kampong or your village and things like that, we see evidence, you know, we can see the highways, pictures and so on, looking at mass traveling and exodus of people going back to kampong. And we realize from published reports from the police and so on, that they have been able to turn back, let's say, 1,000 cars, 1,500 cars. But the exodus is tremendous. I don't think that they were able to do that. And we can see the, you know, from GPS and things like that, the increased number of traffic in their own states. That means people have been able, either through the normal highway or through backdoor highway, Jalan Tikus or things like that, they will have been able to actually come back home to their own countries or their own village or kampung for, you know, celebration or meeting their relatives and things like that. And what we worry is that they are bringing the cases back to their kampung, but in the end, now they are there. When they come back to work, let's say they are able to travel, they are also bringing whatever that they have in their kampung back to us. And we are not able to screen it by right. In certain other countries, what they do is movement. Every time there is a movement, they're going to screen the so-called individual, whether you have any COVID infection. And when you come back again, you have to be screened before you travel into your district. So that is something that probably we can think about and should be done. Of course, the cost is by right should be borne by the individual, because in the first place, we did not allow you to go back or travel back, you know, but now you're doing it on your own, so you're at risk. You know? We can penalize you a few thousands, a few hundreds, but in the end, we need to keep the transmission at bay. And one of them is through screening, and then you basically isolate and also quarantine yourself. The problem of quarantine is also another big issue. People are not adherent. Even though you're supposed to be quarantined, especially if you're quarantined at home, because, you know, your COVID, you have different clinical stages. So if your COVID is not so severe, you present with just, you know, asymptomatic or a bit of mild cough and things like that, you will be, you know, staying at home. So unfortunately, most of these people do not actually adhere to proper quarantine procedures, or they don't understand the proper quarantine procedures. So they, you know, move about, meet other people, go toilet, go class, attend, you know, some gatherings and things like that, and you are disseminating it everywhere. So there's even some speculation in Selangor, let's say in Selangor, there's even some speculation saying that it is so bad that it's for one person per 46 population, you're going to see one case, you know, there's going to be someone who's positive, which is alarming, because we tend to mingle with people we know, your family members, your friends. And when you go to the office, you might just, you know, lax a bit and open up your mask. And in the end, we don't know who we are meeting.
You mentioned earlier, you know, particular restrictions that other countries have put in place. I wanted you to elaborate on that. What countries have done well so far when it comes to controlling the pandemic, and what can we learn from them?
Well, I'll give you an example. For me, the best, I'm not saying SOP or just mitigation. I'm saying more on the vaccine purposes. Some countries have been successful in vaccinating their population. Some of the best countries would be, this is may not be the best example, but so far things like Israel, UAE has been able to do that, even Brunei. Of course, the situations and also the background of each country differs, Shamila. Financial standing of a country is very important, because you need a lot of budget. Once you want to do lockdown, you want to control the population, movement and things like that, you need to pay people. You need to pay the emolument, you need to pay for the logistics, you need to pay for the vaccine purchasing and so on. And we see this, a lot of this success is seen in most of the so-called developed countries. And I'm not saying that all of them are actually successful, but a majority of them are actually coming up from these developed countries. When we say developed countries, these are countries with high income. These are the OECD countries and so forth. We have not been able to follow in certain stages because maybe of the dynamics of so many populations, so many ethnicities, but also there was some confusions of direction. Of directives, which we saw, some of the directives coming from different ministries was not streamlined, which sometimes create confusion at the public level. So in the end, you know, you might quote someone and another one may quote another different guidelines or addressing different rule, and this creates confusion and this creates an opportunity for the virus basically to be transmitted more. So one example would be, well, Singapore did very well, but now they are in lockdown again. And of course, they blame it to the, they blame it on the expatriates or the foreigners who work there. And they keep saying that, you know, they have a huge number of expatriates as well. And these are the people who they claim that are the ones responsible for actually bringing them back into the so-called wave again, and also for the lockdown. And in Malaysia, we have a huge number of foreigners, refugees, and of course, other sorts of population as well. So they might be the problem, not only them, but we have locals as well who are not adhering to strict SOPs and rules as well. So this can also come from the highly educated population, because they feel that they might not be untouched. So, this creates the double standards, a lot of confusion again, and people will say that, oh, why can they do that and I cannot do that, and so forth.
Dr. Sharifa, thanks for speaking with us today.
Most welcome.
That was Dr. Sharifa Izzat Wan Putih, Professor in Health Economics, Hospital and Health Management at the UKM Medical Centre, speaking to us about why an MCO 1, a repeat of MCO 1.0 might be a way to go to manage the pandemic. Let us know your thoughts on this. We'll be back after the news to discuss this further from a mental health as well as an economic perspective. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:37, well, just coming up to 6:38, really. You're listening to Inside Story. I'm Sharmila, and we're spending today's Inside Story discussing the possibility of a full lockdown, a return in many ways to MCO 1.0, where all economic activities were closed. And this is coming, of course, in the wake of increasing numbers of positive cases every day, an increasing number of deaths. Our medical resources and facilities are stretched. And the National Security Council had a meeting today, which many are saying might be a precursor to announcing that lockdown. So we want to hear from you. Is this something that you would like to see? Do you want to see a stricter lockdown and a return to MCO 1.0? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 0187898899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, we have been getting a variety of opinions, really, and just going to go through some of them. Kevin says, a full lockdown is highly unlikely when industrial stakeholders will have the final say. My meaty letter is more powerful than any MCO variations the government decides on. Kevin, you know, that's something that's come up a number of times. The seeming ease with which many companies and industries have managed to get that exemption and to not have to adhere to the work from home rule, or allowing employees to cross districts to work, for example. And you're right that I would like to see that being enforced, made a little bit more transparent if we were to go back to a full lockdown. James says, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is insanity. We shouldn't waste our time discussing the extent of the MCO. Let's talk about the vaccination rollout that can be executed faster. Absolutely. I completely see where you're coming from, James. The vaccine rollout is something that's been pointed out as really lagging behind, and in many ways, the one thing that can help with this constant cycle of rising numbers and the constant cycle of lockdowns. Rosalind, on the other hand, says, yes, I agree to a complete lockdown, as citizens are just not obedient enough to do their part in breaking the curve. In a war, everything comes to a stop, no activities and no business at all. In this war, where our enemies are invisible and deaths in Malaysia are steadily going up, it's no different. We need to drastically stop all businesses and stay at home. I'm glad you brought that up, Rosalind, because while I'm in no way saying that more shouldn't be done in terms of enforcement and from a government perspective, I do find it incredibly frustrating when I see average citizens, people really treating these SOPs like they're optional, treating them like they can pick and choose what they want to adhere to and what not to. I still see people talking about having parties or gatherings. Oh, we're all in the same district, so it's all right. I often feel like we've brought ourselves to this point. Complaining about a lockdown is pointless when if you hadn't actually been adhering to the SOPs to begin with. Stephen, on the other hand, doesn't agree with the idea of a full MCO. And he says, I personally don't agree, even though right now it seems like we don't have a choice. It took about 1 month to a full 1 month of a full lockdown in 2020 to bring down the cases from 200 to double digits. Currently, we have 6,000 daily cases. How many months of lockdown do we need this time? Many SMEs and franchises are already struggling, and this could be the last straw on the camel's back. The cycle of lockdown, cases going down, then reopening the economy, and then cases going up again, and lockdown again, has proven that we need a better long-term strategy rather than having many rounds of short-term lockdowns, which squeeze the economy badly. While currently our priority is to contain the virus, I hope that the government will speed up the vaccination rate to get herd immunity as fast as possible. I'm with you there on the vaccine rollout. And yes, point well made on the fact that the economy is actually a really big concern, particularly when it comes to smaller businesses who have really been spending a long time struggling and never really recovering their footing. LK Chua says full lockdown. I'm for a full lockdown. No life, no economy. No economy, got life to recover later. That's a sentiment I think that a number of people have been expressing, that it's time that we put lives ahead of the economy for now, because the economy is something that we can focus on later. Let's see what we have. Stuart, who says, the spreading occurs when there are no SOPs. The lockdown ignores this problem. Ministry of Health data shows that 80% of clusters are workplace, 50% community, construction, education, detention. Shops only 5% in dining, which is insignificant. Lockdown these places, not the whole country. Workplaces must have SOPs and safety offices to enforce. No hats and shoes, not allowed in constructions, but SOPs. Lockdown is useless unless people are educated and disciplined. That makes so much sense, Stuart. I think you're absolutely right when you say that on the one hand, we have SOPs, we have lockdowns, but when you go down to the ground and you actually speak to people about their companies or their workplaces, not everyone actually adheres to them. They may in paper, they may have the whole hygiene theater of having, temperature checks and having to check in when you come in and all of those things. But I still hear of people calling meetings where people take their masks off. I've been hearing about companies insisting that people come in to work when they shouldn't be or when they're ill. People do have to be educated and better disciplined. Danny says, MCO 1.0 is madness now. A full lockdown may have worked last year when it just started. Not now. A million and more will lose their jobs. It's a vicious cycle. So think hard before you go back to MCO 1.0. Keep those thoughts coming. Is a full lockdown back to an MCO 1.0 something that you think we should implement? You can call us 7733290, WhatsApp 0187898899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll discuss the potential impact of a full lockdown, on the people on the ground from a mental health perspective, from a livelihood perspective. And for that, we'll be joined by YB Kasturi Pato, Member of Parliament for Batu Kawan. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:46. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila. And today we are discussing the possibility of a return to MCO 1.0. The National Security Council met earlier today. Still no word on what the results of that are. But there have been, there's potential for that picking up over the course of the week. We've been seeing rising numbers. So earlier we discussed the public health impact and ramifications of implementing a full lockdown. And now we're going to be looking at this from a, I suppose, an on the grounds perspective. And for that, we are going to be speaking to YB Kasturi Pato, Member of Parliament for Batukawan. But let us know what you think. Do you want to see a stricter lockdown? Do you want to see a return to MCO 1.0? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we're crossing over to YB Kasturi Pato, Member of Parliament for Batukawan. YB Kasturi, it's good to have you with us.
Hi, Sharmila. Thank you so much for the invite. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right.
So, In talking about these lockdowns, right, the issue has always been balancing lives and livelihoods. How have you seen the MCO and the pandemic as a whole affecting those in your constituency?
I think there are a few angles that I have looked at it, particularly with what it has done or how it has affected my constituents. In the first MCO, many of men and women, and many of them who came to my office were women who had been laid off their jobs because of this MCO, which meant that they had to depend on aid from other sources to be given to them. Now, we're talking about families that are just making enough to make ends meet every month. And when there's a reduction in their salary or a pay cut or even told to stay home, and that also meant that you will not be paid, meant that they did not know where else to go. You cannot do any other side business or part-time business because the whole country was on lockdown. And that was when we really had to up our distribution of aid to these families. So that affected many, many families in my constituency.
And specifically getting into the mental health aspect of it, which is something you've highlighted before as well, have you seen anxieties around the pandemic affecting the mental well-being of the people you know and the people you serve?
Oh, yes. From my visits to the market, speaking to traders, when I use public transport, Grab, you know, the kind of feedback that you get, the mood is very somber, and there's a lot of anger as well, a lot of frustration and anxiety. You have parents who walk into my service center to say, you know, yes, we get some aid from the government, whether it's welfare aid or whether it's Prihatin or whether it's Panjana. But on the other hand, there's all these other bills and payments that we need to come up with. And if I cannot pay my rent, then my owner is going to throw me out of the house. And they come with so much hope in their hearts that we'll be able to support them and help them financially. We do what we can, but the issue is that in this case now, opposition MPs have their allocations greatly reduced from what we had before. So you could only try to allocate or give them whatever you can a little bit just to ease their burden. But there is not just among parents, but the anxiety among students as well. The anxiety among operators, kindergarten operators, preschool operators, anxiety among traders, your small traders, your gerai, your warung. You know, it is, there's a mood in the air of hopelessness, you know, and we do our best to come up and to help them here and there, Penang State government coming up with incentives to assist them. But it has affected. And last week, there was a person who jumped off the second bridge in Penang. And the week, 2 weeks before that, and also an attempted suicide. And a month before that, also in front of the child, the mother attempted to commit suicide. And I foresee this trend escalating if it is not addressed immediately.
Now, you mentioned a number of different people just now. I was wondering whether certain groups are more affected by these issues than others.
I think generally speaking, it's the B40, people who fall in that B40 socioeconomic category who are more affected than this lockdown than anyone else. But we must also not forget the M40. And let's not also forget that over the years, there's been a revision of the poverty index line. For many, many, many years, the government has stuck to 970 ringgit as the poverty index line. And after a review by UNICEF and UNDP and UNFPA and all the other United Nations chapters, finally the government agreed that they needed to look at the recommendations of this UN chapters, that the poverty index line needs to be increased. So it has been increased to slightly over 2,000 ringgit, which means that all those people who had been earning more than that, but more than 970 ringgit, now have all been pushed into the poverty, under that poverty index line, which meant they are on the other end of the spectrum that needs handheld or government-assisted aid for them to go about their day-to-day lives. But again, it is the single mother. If you want to look at groups, then it is the disabled community, women, particularly single mothers, and even working mothers who are trying to make ends meet. Single fathers as well, those who are running small businesses, who earn day-to-day income, all their livelihoods have been affected. So it has affected everyone, but on different levels, different degrees, but more on the B40. Plus, you find that the restaurants have been affected, all these other industries. Because there's no clear guideline, there's no clear approach by the government as well. And it's quite disappointing because we had the whole year and we had seen how other countries had done it, best practices from other countries, failures of other countries, and we should have learned from all that and looked at a long-term plan. With the country in a so emergency state, Parliament is not allowed to convene. Unfortunately, I have to use BFM as a platform now to speak about these issues, which I should be speaking about in Parliament.
What will another lockdown do? What are your thoughts on that?
A lockdown can only be effective if it is properly enforced to restrict movement. But on the other hand, we also have the economy to look at. These are the crises that the country is facing now, the health crisis, the economic crisis, and the political crisis. But I'm going to put that aside first. We really want to speak about the health and the economic crisis. If the government does not come up with a robust and firm decision on extending or imposing a moratorium and extending it, on assisting small traders, on assisting groups that were solely dependent on their companies running the food and F&B industry, the bus operators, there's been no word about how they are going to sustain their industry. I think the lockdown will be another failure again. I know there's been a lot of calls by many Malaysians from all walks pushing who want to see a lockdown, but because the lockdown affects us all differently, we need to ensure no one is left behind as a casualty from the lockdown. We're looking at bringing down the numbers, which again we have to remind ourselves, these high numbers, a number of the high percentage of positive cases, especially recorded in Selangor, is due to the mass testing, which is good. But then again, you have clusters all over the country. So the lockdown must come also, cannot be implemented if the government does not push vaccination drive, does not impose a moratorium, and come up with clear guidelines. Since the country is in emergency and the government makes a lot of announcements without going through Parliament, I believe that it is in a position of power and authority to also make announcements on saving businesses. And that's what we need at the end of the day. One day the coffers will dry up and we will not have money to give those who need, who are dependent, welfare aid, one-off aid, etc. And then what happens then? So we depend on the economy as much as the economy depends on the government. And I think that should be a priority.
Now, just touching on that mental health aspect, right? What sorts of measures have you seen the government roll out to address the toll that the pandemic is taking on mental health? What more could be done?
I think first and foremost, apart from what I had mentioned just now, that government needs to look into saving businesses and industries. That looks like it is the main driving factor behind a person deciding, making that decision to end his or her life, which is a very, very sad thing. And I believe first and foremost, if this part is settled, then or looked into and given the attention, then that is a greater space to look at the other factors as contributing to a person who's driven to that age of, you know, committing suicide. There are a few things. One of it is to invest in human resource, more men and women to attend to calls by those who need this kind of counseling or help, to up the ante on publicizing numbers, whether it's Befrienders, whether it's Sneham, whether it's other NGOs, or even hospitals and clinics that can give consultation on mental health problems. I think these are the things JCOM needs to do, the Ministry of Information, where JCOM is under. I think that's what they need to do. The sole relevance or existence of JCOM in replacement of JASA is to propagate government messaging, government information, etc. I've not seen anything being said or done for to prevent suicide as per se, you know. We often only see in an article carried by any media portal at the last paragraph of the article that is touching on a suicide case or an attempt. The last paragraph is always, you are not alone. If you need help, please call Befrienders or Sneham, etc. But that is when it has already happened. We need to invest in preventive measures, which is to use all the existing social media platforms and even the your conservative media like printed press, like RTM, Astro, you know, and up the ante on reminding people that help is out there. And on the other hand, would be to decriminalize suicide. Often we read that a person who has been rescued from their attempt of committing suicide is taken to the police station. Unless the person has any injuries, etc., then they're taken to the hospital for treatment. But other than that, you know, you often read they were handed over to the police. You know, our bomba saved them, but they'll be handed over to the police, or the police rescued and they'll be taken to the police station. And that's just not how we should be looking at suicide. It is a problem. It is an issue that someone is facing. It's not a crime. You should, you know, it is a very old way of dealing with suicide. It's a very conservative way of dealing with suicide, categorizing it as a crime. Yes, it is in the penal code, but the onus is now on the government to repeal that. You have to decriminalize suicide and not look at it as it is a crime. And I think, apart from that, allocations for mental health and psychiatry has reduced in the budget, Ministry of Health. Although the Deputy Minister of Health in Parliament during the budget debate mentioned that there was actually an increase, but he could not validate that by telling us where that allocation was parked under. And there was no other black and white document that we received in Parliament to say there was an increase and the increase is going here. The money will be parked here. And that's a big query. And the National Suicide Registry, I have not heard of that for years already. What happened to that? And where is the funding for us to invest in that registry so that we have actual real-time numbers of these attempted suicides? And unless and until you address a problem and you have to predict that this problem will be more prevalent if there is a lockdown, you will never be able to find a solution for it.
Kasturi, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much, Shamila. You take care.
You too. That was YB Kasturi Pato, MP for Batu Kawan, speaking to us about the mental health ramifications of a lockdown. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.